according to Luke, the 8th chapter. Glory to you, O Lord. Then Jesus and his disciples arrived at the country of the Gerasenes, which is opposite Galilee. As he stepped out on the land, a man of the city who had demons met him. For a long time he had worn no clothes, and he did not live in a house, but in the tombs. When he saw Jesus, he fell down before him and shouted at the top of his voice, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, do not torment me." For Jesus had commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man. For many times it had seized him. He was kept under guard and bound with chains and shackles, but he would break the bonds and be driven by the demons into the wilds. Jesus then asked him, "What is your name?" He said, "Legion," for many demons had entered him. They begged him not to order them to go back into the abyss. Now there on the hillside, a large herd of swine was feeding, and the demons begged Jesus to let them enter these. So he gave them permission. Then the demons came out to the man and entered the swine, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and was drowned. When the swine herders, you can also see them as businessmen, saw what had happened, they ran off and told it in the city and in the country. Then people came out to see what had happened, and when they came to Jesus, they found the man from whom the demons had gone, sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. Those who had seen it told them how the one who had been possessed by demons had been healed. Then all the people of the surrounding country of the Gerasenes asked Jesus to leave them, for they were seized with great fear. So he got into the boat and returned. The man from whom the demons had gone begged that he might be with him. But Jesus sent him away, saying, "Return to your home and declare how much God has done for you." So he went away, proclaiming throughout the city how much Jesus had done for him. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
You may be seated. Grace, peace, and mercy are yours from the triune God. Amen. From a book called Simple Grace, A Mentor's Guide to Growing Older, the author, Malcolm Boyd, writes this. Individuality, including eccentricity, ought to be an option for everyone. There's entirely too much standardized, homogenized, socially prescribed behavior at all levels of our culture. When I was a kid, the classic movie Frankenstein was playing in the theaters. I was turned off by the idea of a monster running amok, acting irrationally, terrifying people, and creating havoc. My worst nightmare would have been to run into Frankenstein on a forbidding country lane on a dark, rainy night. Half a century later, however, I rented the video and I watched the film at home. Quickly, I realized that the demonized creature was not so much a monster as a victim. Frankenstein, who had never asked to be created, yearned to be loved, but was demonized in people's imaginations. I realize now to what extent most of us are conditioned by forces ranging from entrenched attitudes to mass media images that cause us to look at fabricated story types, stereotypes, instead of real people. Unquote. As I read that, as I thought about the man in our story, I couldn't help but think about the TV show Modern Family, if any of you have ever watched it. The episode when the Dunphy family is playing baseball in their backyard, and one of them, I think it's the mom, hits the ball into the neighbor's backyard. And the parents immediately call off the game because, well, that was the only ball they had. And they then announce that no one was allowed to go into Mr. Klizak's backyard because he was scary and creepy, says the parents. In Harper Lee's novel, To Kill a Mockingbird, there was this scary house that was mentioned throughout, the place that the kids were scared of. It was actually the Radley place, or the home where the Radley family lived. Or I also think of the Beast in the movie Beauty and the Beast. If one takes time to look deeper, we begin to realize the truth of those people, who those people are, and maybe realize they are different from what society has labeled them. In our gospel story today, we have basically one of those people, this creepy and scary person, and everybody needs to stay away from him. But what do we really know about this man? Name? We're not told. Doesn't seem to matter. It seems like what ails him is what defines him. And at this point, what defines him is something almost inhuman. And I have to wonder, what does it feel like? What does it mean to be seen as something other than human? I've always wondered where are his clothes. And I guess I just always assumed that he refused to wear them. But then I started to wonder, maybe he wasn't given any clothes. That the people who might be throwing food at him to eat, because nobody's come close, didn't feel he deserved clothes, that he wasn't worthy of any clothing. Where did he live? That's pretty clear. He didn't live in a house. But it never says if he chose to live amongst the dead, or if that's where the people wanted him, if that's where they put him. How does that make a person feel to be seen as dead to your community? The community wants to believe that you are dead. They continue to chain you up so that you stay there and the community doesn't have to encounter you. And then, like in To Kill a Mockingbird, what are the children told about this man? What do they think about him? And now are generations taught to fear him? This man encounters Jesus and Jesus heals the man. And when the man asks to continue the journey with Jesus, Jesus replies in a way that had to be scary for the community and for the man. For the man, he knew that Jesus loved him and he cared for him, and Jesus showed him respect. But is that what he's going to get when he goes back to the community? Of course the community doesn't want him back in town. Imagine that happening in our towns. Someone we have assumed to be a monster is allowed to come back. Well, I know there would be people that would be up in arms. He ain't gonna live next to me. And our children surely won't be safe. We might just have to lock ourselves in our house. But even then, are we truly safe from this monster? But what about the man? What must he be going through? Will people actually welcome him back? And even more, will people actually try to kill him the next chance they get? Really, who wins in that situation? I would love to say that it was all great, and they threw a party for him in return, you know, killed the fatted calf. But probably not. Would you? Would you welcome him in with open arms as soon as Jesus heals him? Would you welcome him into your home? And for me, it almost seems like Jesus doesn't get it as he leaves. He just seems to leave with a, hey, have a nice life, you're all fixed. Everything's normal again. Our text says that the man went away proclaiming throughout the city how much Jesus had done for him. But I wonder who was actually listening to him. Were the people still waiting for the monster to come again, or did they really listen to him? But the truth is, what he preaches, it doesn't change the message, and just might be heard by those who need to hear it the most. By those also separated from their family and their communities. Maybe others around him who have also been labeled, who are seen as worthless or even worse. Maybe the message from this man brings them hope. Because there's a lot of people being labeled in ways that alienate them from families and communities. People who are told that they are abomination to God, who are never given a chance to be seen for the child of God that they really are. Maybe, just maybe, they can hear this message of Christ's love for everyone, even them, whether they live amongst the dead or sleep on a bench in a park or stand in a line at a food pantry. Because this grace, this love, is not just for a chosen few, but for everyone, even the ones forced